Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way. Welcome back to another edition of Imagine This Podcast. I'm Mac.
Hey, everybody. It's David.
And I'm Lindsay.
Yeah. Thanks again for joining. It's Tuesday. You know what that means. It's another lovely session with us celebrating the joyful abundance of arts and culture in Milwaukee and beyond.
And another week of one of us coming back from the promised land of Minnesota. Mac, how was St. Paul?
St. Paul was lovely. I didn't bother crossing the river, although I went up to the river on a walk, but I decided not to cross over to Minneapolis. I kept St. Paul side. Mm-hmm. So I know all of our listeners love the updates on what's going on in the Twin Cities.
Well, here's a question. Did you feel the number one nation in public arts funding?
I did. It's amazing.
So what, you felt it in the water, in the air?
The air is cleaner. Smiles are brighter. And everyone's all of above average height, as one person used to say. The show that was before Live From Here used to reference, but we won't mention anymore because of problematic.
No, we don't say that name anymore.
Yeah.
Speaking of other podcasts.
Yes.
Or other shows, I should say.
Talk about other shows.
Other radio shows. You know, listeners, Mac and I were brainstorming about what to bring you today. Yes, that's right. In the writer's room. While David sits in his cryptocurrency cloud.
Yeah, it's a cloud that's comprised of just rolling statistics of Dogecoin and whatever coin Snoop Dogg is passing off for currency lately, all this stuff. He just sits there and, you know, it's kind of like in Minority Report where there's like dolphin people were like in the water and they would help predict the analytics of what's happening with crimes. That's the same thing. David got the home version of that and he just sits that in his office. Mm-hmm. While Lindsay and I are in the salt mines.
My portfolio is down 5.65%, just for those of you who are interested.
Yes.
Oof. Well,
good thing you didn't click on his and the ephemera, his cryptocurrency.
Yeah, my crypto buys. That's right. The top three crypto buys for 2021. That's right.
Yeah, so apologies to the Boulder delegation. You lost a whole hill of money. Our stalwart and loyal Boulder delegation all went in on
currency.
Go ahead.
Back in the writer's room, my ideas ran dry this week. So we are going to take a shameless steal from another podcast, the Pop Culture Happy Hour. Given that this recording time is basically happy hour, we're each going to take a turn sharing with you something in pop culture that caught our attention this week.
And made us happy.
Mm-hmm.
It gave us joy, which is the theme, actually, when you interview Amanda Huff. So thanks, Lindsay, for that awesome idea and inviting me to think about it. I will start by saying the one thing that gave me joy this week, I was watching a documentary on YouTube because I'm old and I watch YouTube now. I finally caught up to everybody else that YouTube's pretty cool, but there's all these like gems on YouTube. And so what I watched was Babylon on Fire, which is a documentary about the West Indies cricket team in the 70s and 80s. And before everybody turns off the podcast, let me say you don't need to like cricket, but rather it was really fascinating to see sort of the intersection of politics and culture, particularly around a sport like cricket, which is created by English people who colonized the world, and how the West Indies used it as a way to actually assert itself in terms of independence culturally. From England and the United Kingdom, as well as the intersection of Jimmy Cliff, Bob Marley, West Indian cricket team, confluence of art and culture and sport to project a new image of the West Indies. So super fascinating. You can find it on YouTube. There's two-parter. It's about an hour and a half. And again, you don't like cricket. They do a good job of just framing like cricket happens to be the vehicle for how the West Indies countries actually came together. Because it wasn't like one country. It's like it's an amalgam of different countries got together to form this team to compete and win at the international level of cricket. So that's what made me happy to speak, was watching that and learning something, like going like, huh. Anytime I get to go, huh, nodding, cool. It was a good week. And that's Babylon on Fire. That's what it did for me. David, how about you?
You know, two things. One, Thank you for programming our Thursday morning, like sort of virtual check-in, and asking the pre-question, which is, what's a bop? Like, what's a bop that you associate with the summer? And that sort of got me earlier this week revisiting Passion Pit's first album, Manners, which I associate so much with my first summer here in Milwaukee. And so I went back and actually listened to it again last night while I was cleaning up and cooking dinner, and I just sort of got sort of taken right back to 2010. And by the way, can you believe that album is over 10 years old? So that made me really, really happy. Second thing, though, is sort of referring to another podcast out there. I've been listening to the podcast Asian Enough from the LA Times. And I just got to the first episode of the second season with Sandra Oh, and I think sort of as a bit of a halo from API Month and the panel that you and I did, Mac, at the Milwaukee Rep, celebrating AAPI leaders. It was just really, I think, powerful to hear Sandra Oh talk about kind of how, I think in some ways she's kind of found her activist voice, particularly in light of some of the events over the last year with regard to Asians and COVID and violence towards Asians. And I think at this moment of like how communities are responding to Black Lives Matter, stop AAPI hate, I think it's an important moment where we I think have to remember that these are not these don't take away from each other, right? That somehow we have to figure out how to combine forces and make sure that the folks who have been most either so seen or so unseen sort of get included in our community's conversations in a more inclusive and appropriate way.
So you brought two things. You brought two things.
I did. Sorry.
Leave it to David to take like pop culture happy hour and make it real serious.
Or pop culture hour.
I don't know how you guys went to me second, right? Like that was the mistake in the writer's room, by the way. I should have been there.
Well,
should have been there.
I should have been there. So the internet told me that I needed to watch Bo Burnham's new special on Netflix, Inside. I won't give any spoilers because I know because David and Max told me to watch it. But it was a real like fever dream time capsule of the last year. I think it was funny, but mostly it was really really astute, blunt social observations about where we are as a country and also where all of our individual mental states are after a year inside. So would recommend, got to be in the right mood for it. Got to be, I mean, you'll get drawn in, but prepare to be, to wallow for a little bit. Wallow and sort of laugh for like an hour and a half. So check it out.
Wait, that's not serious?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you know, fair enough.
I think all of our things were serious, right? West Indies, cricket and culture and sports
We consume very serious pop culture.
We contain multitudes, everybody. Mm-hmm. You know who else contains multitudes? Our guest, who's coming up after the break, and about our guest, Amanda Huff. Amanda describes themselves as an electronic musician, film composer, lawful evil sorcerer, and bug extraordinaire, hailing from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Also, part of the new band called You Win, 3 exclamation marks, which can be found at SoundCloud. You Win is a fresh new trip hop, dark pop project hailing from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Currently comprised of both Amanda Huff and This Random Machine, who produces it. They are initially bonded over electronic music, video games, fantasy lore, and an instant artistic chemistry. So we'll also talk about that new initiative. After the break, we'll meet Amanda Joy Huff. Amanda Huff. Welcome to the pod.
Hello. Oh,
man. That's really, that's on.
I like it. Hello. Hello, listeners aren't seeing this, but Amanda has a little derby that's about the size of her, like a little derby, and she just propped it up. Like, hello, hi there.
Top of the morning.
Top of the morning.
It's before noon.
If we're lucky, Amanda will let us know where the pot of gold is hidden, and Lindsay and I will no longer have to toil in the mines of nonprofit arts administration. Welcome so much to the pod and being willing to endure our whimsy. But we're so excited to have you, as we've been fans from afar. We probably owe you streaming money for the amount of times you stream your songs on the pod. So thanks for being willing to come and join us today.
Yeah, it's really cool to, you know, continue connecting those dots. I mean, I have the music on the podcast and just have been, you know, connected through different sinews to the organization, especially through the pandemic. And so to get to talk with y'all is very exciting.
Awesome. Well, it's definitely all our pleasure. So we would love to get started by asking you to think back to a time of an arts and cultural experience that left a strong imprint on you. Bring us back to that experience and how it might have had an influence on who you are.
Okay. Well, gonna get dark really fast here. I think probably one of the most important art experiences here was when I first moved to Milwaukee. I initially moved here to go to MIAD for art school, a painting major. And my first year, I was in this class that was like open media, and kind of the focus was more about the concepts. Mm-hmm. And we had a student in there who was, he was known for doing like, I guess you could say like pretty transgressive art. Mm. And at the end of the semester, he did this piece where he took a piece of sandpaper, like a belt sander, and I don't know how to describe what it was. It looks like a roller coaster cart, the face that would be like on the front of one, and placed it at the end of the sandpaper. And then he stripped down to just his underwear and dragged himself along the piece of sandpaper. Yeah. So it was like the entire class was just watching this and was quiet. And when he got up, he was covered in blood and just had like, he'd scrubbed part of himself raw. And as a freshman coming from the suburbs, I was just like, what? And it was a beautiful piece, but it was also just so hard to watch. And, you know, it was clear that this was more than just like the aesthetic of sandpaper or the cartoon face of this sculpture that he was dragging himself into, or like, it wasn't just doing it for shock factor. I think there were things that he was dealing with that he didn't know how to articulate any other way. And so it made me think about like, what role does the mental state have in art? What is the ethics of being the audience? What is the shield of the institution? Like, should we have stopped him? Should we have like followed up on that? I don't know. I don't think that we had the tool set. And I think that's something that going into art in general, when you're going to bear yourself or surround yourself by others, how do you make space for both the human and the artist? And that's something that as I went further into my time at MIAD, I would kind of sew into everything that I made, was like, is there a solution? Is this a statement? Is this a conversation? Like, is this just a cry for help? Should I be, you know, filling holes with different things? Yeah, just like, how do you flesh everything out? So.
You know, as you shared that story, Amanda, this is what came up for me, and I wondered your reaction to it. It sounded like it was almost a disorienting moment witnessing that sort of, whoa, I'm in deep, you know, it's a little bit of a deeper water than maybe I anticipated. And I wonder, even in that moment, as someone witnessing it as a fellow student, so you almost had a different relationship in a way. Like it's not as if and again, I'm making lots of assumptions. It's not like I stepped into this exhibition off the street. Like, you kind of knew this person already or had some relationship or shared space. I was sort of wondering, what could you tell me more about that moment of disorientation and how you reacted to it, or perhaps the role of disorientation when you create pieces, right? Is that something you're willing to talk about? Because that to me, I was just super curious. I'm just sort of wondering.
Yeah. I think during that moment, my brain was a little blown, and I kept kind of looking to the instructor to watch like how they would respond. For guidance, I didn't really have my own independent brain yet. Yeah. And also, I'm not sure if like intervening would have been the right move either. Because I knew them while I went to school with them, but I wasn't like close.
Yeah.
So the other thing was just watching the other people and like that were closer to him to see how they were responding and if that was like a means for intervention or what to talk about. I think like I didn't really fully understand what that would be like till my senior year when I started creating art on a much more vulnerable level rather than like conceptual or technical. I spent good sophomore, junior years of making very beautiful dark pieces, but I don't think that the vulnerability was their core till my senior year when I took a performance art class. And that kind of like was, you don't have enough time to be like stressing over the technicality. You just need to explode and sew that into the truth of your project. So I came in and did a performance piece once where it was unplanned. It wasn't what I was planning on doing, but I was in such a weird mental state that I guess I should backtrack a little bit. Like my senior year, I was struggling a ton with managing OCD. And so I didn't really know how to put words to it or a name to it or articulate it fully. It was just something that I was constantly tumbling through. I was obsessed with my job. All I could think about was like the way the containers were, or if they were completely clean, or like, you know, eat, sleep, breathe, dream about this sort of stuff. So when it came time to put on my performance, obviously my brain was not thinking about the art that I had spent the past few weeks crafting. It was just going through the motions of like, I'll take the oranges to the back, or, you know, I'll sweep the floors, just like that cycle of system processing. And so I go into class and I just am reciting all of these things, just like free spitting all the junk that's cycling in my brain out. And afterwards the class claps and I'm just confused, because it's not, it was art because it was put in the space of an art piece. And I think it was art because it was just this this offering of me, who considers myself an artist, but it was a lot more than that. And so to be on the end of everybody's clapping and I just want to go into the hallway to cry, like, what, I don't know. It was a weird perspective of like, now I'm the one making these things. Now I'm the one that's putting these people in that place where they have to decide whether to intervene. Is that fair of me? Is that like right of me? What is the institution doing for both like my art brand and my well-being? It's not something that I'm trying to fault anyone for. It's just like this weird dichotomy of where does the human start and the artist end? I don't know if that fully answers your question. It's just,
I don't think it has to fully answer my question. I didn't know the question when I asked it. I was just pulling on that moment of disorientation, and it struck me like that's what happens when I experience art sometimes, right? I've used this phrase before: the familiar is strange and the strange is familiar, right? And I'm recalibrating things, and either that's visually or audio or immersive. And you just shared a story of how that happened, right? And I was just sort of curious, to your point, these are intentional designs of, I'd like to think, right? These are intentional, to your point, as an artist, there's a concept, a thinking, a purpose of the arrangements, whatever form you're in, right? Mm-hmm. And again, at that time, you were still sort of forming it and you're continuing to form and unfold. I assume you're not a finished product now, right? That's the beauty of it. You get to
keep
doing. So let's, as we meta-analyze our conversation, Amanda, that's fine what you just said. Like I said, I really don't know what the answer is. I was just really curious about how it landed. So that's,
yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
I mean, I think it's something that too, I take into my music career now. Obviously anyone that's seen me perform live knows that I put a lot of emotion. I'm a very emotional person, but I put a lot of emotion and vulnerability into my performances. And it's something that, you know, taking that step between my education and my ability to find release in different forms through visual and performance art into my music, like when is it too much there? I don't know. Mm. Or when is it that is exactly what needs to be done? Mm-hmm. Like solidarity through something that is a lot more raw and unfiltered than shiny and polished and curated and
I'm curious, you've been noting a lot the role of the audience in experiencing that art. And at what point do they need to intervene or do they need to co-create and somehow in the creation of the work versus just an artist like outputting to the audience, you know? And I'm curious, mm-hmm. in your performance life now, if there have been strong memories of a moment that an audience member approached you after a show and said, you know, wow, this really revealed something for me about myself or just more about that exchange. I'm curious.
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of instances, especially more lately, as I've started to be more vocal on my social platforms just about mental health and the ways that it's integrated into art and music. Mm. I was doing a shoot a few weeks ago with my friend Valerie, and we shot a particularly heavy scene where I kind of just like left my plane of consciousness. That sounds really like, but you know, I don't know. I exited just like the base form of thinking about things. And afterwards, the first thing that she said was like, do you need aftercare? You know, and that kind of struck me. It was like, okay, you know, you see this as more than just like a performance. This is a release. And what do you need to do to get to a space where you feel stable again to continue working on this project? Mm. Like you can take breaks. Or I think about shows and stuff where instead of just being congratulated or complimented or even critiqued, I do like critiques. You can come up and tell me something sucks or that I'm off. Like I love that. But I think I really do. My favorite is when somebody comes up afterwards and has either a personal story about their experience during the show, what brought them emotion, or a place that it took them, or just a way that they were able to emotionally connect. I think that's like, I know that I'm going to go to painful spaces with my work and my art, but ultimately my goal is to be able to create community for other people to not feel alone. And so it makes it all really worth that when we're sharing that back and forth of, you know, this really opened up something for me, or this made me think of my parents, or I don't know, like something specific.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned doing a video. Right. Or shoot.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So it's, you got a visual arts formal education there, right? You also a stalwart of the music scene here. And so I'm discerning, right? There's these mixed different mediums, you know, different platforms you're operating in. And I'd just sort of love to learn more about how you see. I'm afraid of using a word because then almost suggests the answer. right? Like if I say, how do they relate? Then you're like, well, Mac, this is how they relate. And like, I don't want that to happen because maybe they don't, but I'm curious about for you, I guess it'd be like, you wouldn't want to be known as, I don't know what you want. A projection I'll have is that you see yourself as an artist that happens to be in many media, much yes. less, oh, I'm a musician. I'm a this. I would just love, I just sort of wonder, what do you, my wondering is, and you know, what I'm noticing in real time, Amanda, I'm like trying so hard to be right, you know? So I'm just going to name it. Like, I'm trying to impress Amanda. I'm trying to have the right answer because I'm trying to keep up with her artistry. Like, that's what I'm doing right now. So like, let's name it, let's normalize it and let it go. Cause we could just, who knows, when we edit it out later. But I think there's some level of like, again, you have this as an artist, there's a desire of like, on one level, artist might not be enough to describe because it's like so open-ended in a way, and maybe that's okay. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you don't want to limit to a medium. So if it's like, how do you hope that people, if others describe what you do, what do you hope they would say?
Yeah.
What a roundabout way to get to that question. That's,
no, it's all right.
Yeah.
I would say artist first, like yeah. as a title. I want that to encompass not only the visual arts, yeah. but the music, but the writing and the, I guess I'm not really like a super director yet. I'm so bad with tech. I got to work up to that one. Yeah. But yeah, I like artist as an all-encompassing
yeah.
thing. Because I think that is really like, I'm not just creating a song or a painting or like one singular thing. I really love living in that fluid space mm-hmm. of you can do anything at any time and it's going to be, okay, now this sounds, anything is art. Like, but... But it's like yeah. everything.
I love
art.
That you're also calibrating and correcting in real time because you just noticed, gosh, I'm going to say this out loud and it's going to sound like the sound of people turning off this podcast simultaneously yeah. as soon as I say it out loud.
So, wait.
Let me name this. Hold on. We're all holding crystals and we're burning sage. Hold on. But you're, to your point, right? You're acknowledging that like
yeah, there's everything I do has an element of artistry to it. You mm-hmm. know, even when I'm working at my day jobs, you know, I work a cleaning job, but no, I'm not. I am unearthing the sink or I am dancing around the space. I'm just like interacting with these things, from an art perspective and trying to find a way that I can fold everything back in. I'm just like, also, I can't commit. I'm just interested in too many freaking things.
Yeah.
Like, let's work with this thing. I don't know how that works. Let's just do it.
Yeah. But it sounds like you're, and again, I just want to follow up, or at least what I'm noticing is your description of what you said suggests that we all have ability to access the artistry in ourselves because it can manifest itself in a numerous ways. Right. And I think what's fascinating is that we all don't necessarily give ourselves permission to look at ourselves that way. And one of my wonderings is, what if we did? You know, what would it mean for that? Or what do you react to that? What would it mean if we all were able to act? Because here's a hypothesis or assumption I'll throw out there. Some people are artists, capital A artists, because they went to MIAD and they studied the thing and they do the thing. Right, which creates a beautiful wall and a fleet of unicorns that move about the city that are special and they do the thing. You know? And again, your reaction, I was like, I don't know about that. I agree. I don't know about that either. Although I might offer, there's some people that suits them. Like they're glad that that's the definition. Like that works for them, or that supports a system that propagates a certain way. Right, but I also have a point of view. I'm wondering your point of view. Like, what would it mean if there was a different point of view on that? Right, that everybody could access that. Everybody does access it.
I mean, so I look at it this way. I call myself an artist because that is the conversations that I want to have when I talk about interacting with something. I don't think that you need the institution. MIAD is very expensive. Like, and I think just like the college institution, as much as I love my time at MIAD, this is not a rip on MIAD. This is just on institutions.
Institutional, you're right. Authorization of some sort, right? Accreditation and whatnot.
It's the classist load of shit. Like you don't need that to be able to have the conversations or the perspectives. And sometimes that puts up this bubble that shields you from getting into the grit of like humanity. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, for a lot of people that functions really wonderfully, and others I think are just calling themselves artists because they paid that amount of money, so they better but their heart is elsewhere, or the conversations they want to have are elsewhere, or maybe they just need more time to come around to it, or I don't know. I just don't think that going to an art college is what definitively makes you an artist. And it's funny, I see so many like beautiful creative people that are just doubting their artistic capabilities because they don't have that degree. And I just want to shake them and be like, this is some of the best art I've ever seen. And I've critiqued a lot of art. No, but accessibility in general in the art and music scene is just weird to me in how it draws that line between who considers themselves an artist or a producer or a musician or, you know.
I'm curious to that end. You know, we had kind of posed to you the question of, you know, finish the sentence, the Mocky music scene is. But I'm also curious, based on what you were just saying, what can Milwaukee do to better support and move along the sorts of co-conspirators in the artistic world here that you're talking about that might not feel like, oh, I've reached a plane where I can like actually call myself an artist one. Like, how can we help as a city uplift and validate to some extent, whatever validation means, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think just like, the continual dissemination and accessibility of resources, like something that I was really excited about was the generator program doing so many free lectures at 88.9 for the past few years about like how to handle the business thing, or, you know, how to produce this, or, you know, and the amount of people that would fill up that space that, you know, I had never met before, and now they're all able to access this. I mean, I remember even when I learned how to get my song onto Spotify and how suddenly I felt like, now I'm a legitimate musician. Yeah. It's really just like, no, you sign up for a freaking website and it puts it on there. Like, there are all these layers that just didn't occur to me because I didn't grow up in the space that taught me how to do any music whatsoever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. Like, I think especially with social media and the pandemic bringing so much onto Zoom and just virtual in general, there's been a lot more sharing, and I'd like to see that continued. I'd like to see more talks about how to do your taxes to write yourself off as a sole proprietor, because you can make money off of that, or you can lose a ton of money. Just things that like legitimize the business aspect so that, you know, your parents stop asking, what are you doing with yourself? Or like more access to cheaper technology. Like, what does that look like? Sharing of the resources of what are free programs, or here's a code to get a cheaper program. Something that I've always prided myself on was my ability to MacGyver really bad programs and stuff to make something accessible. Like, I would do talks at UWM to the film students about how to do film scores, and it would be like, here's my 2009 version of GarageBand, but you can work with these resources.
Yeah.
I just like to see those conversations happening of, you don't need $500 equipment to make a sound that is actually pretty good. That resourcefulness, that accessibility, I think.
You know, speaking of shifts in things being more accessible during the pandemic, I'm curious to hear more about how your own artistic practice has changed or stayed or whatever over the past year, somewhat from like a logistical perspective. I am curious if this virtual space has been like a good tool for collaboration, but also just from the perspective of like, how has this different and traumatic time and space possibly influenced your art making?
So it was like, when the pandemic hit, It was really hard, obviously, watching everything kind of dissipate. As far as like stuff I had lined up for the summer or wondering where money was going to come from or, you know, this or that. But it was also a breath of fresh air in a lot of ways because I was losing my mind trying to juggle all of the things that I had lined up and suddenly they were just, okay, let's recenter here. I keep myself busy to a fault sometimes and don't get to focus in on things. So the pandemic allowed me to put everything in a box, streamline it, decide what I wanted to focus on, actually write new material. Since everything had to be done remotely, it forced me to start learning like programs, started doing some of my own production, learned how to do my own home recording. It was nice because I was staying at my house and my roommate was staying with their parents all of like the lockdown. So I just had a home studio to myself and wake up, make music, go to sleep, wake up, make music, go to sleep, like crank out so much. A lot of it was really dumb, but a lot of good stuff too. And it allowed me to capture a lot more vulnerable moments because it was just like cataloging my experience through the pandemic, like all the dark things that resurface when there's no distractions, there's no roommate, there's only you repeating the same like routine every day, and kind of the places you go with that. I don't. It's been wild. Oh, pandemic is wild.
It might be the understatement of the year.
It was kind of like super crazy too, because I had left all of my partners like 2 weeks before the shutdown. Just like already overloading and started like purging everything, and then it was like, okay, well, you were alone. Let's try alone.
Let's really try alone. You wanted alone. Let's really try alone, right?
Yeah. Which sucked and was really scary, but also gave me time to think about like, was I making the right decision? Who was I without like that buffer of comfortability? How had I affected their lives? Like just all these different facets of humanity back and forth, but I guess in the bubble of my house, I don't know. This year is about to get some interesting music from me, I think, but it's conversations that I want to have, that I need to have, that I think without the pandemic, I would not have slowed down enough to give the time that they needed.
Now, as you were talking, Amanda, I was picking up on the pattern, the conversation I want to have, you know, as an artist, these are the conversations that I have, as an individual, these are the conversations I want to have. And when I hear that, it reminds me of the power and agency individuals have, either of the monologue they want to have if they're alone, or even the orientation. So here's me doing a clumsy transition to another conversation. What do you think Milwaukee is an arts, you know, not just music, but beyond, for artists, what do you think is the conversation that needs to happen? Or what is the conversation you wish was happening?
Where do we put everything? I think like Milwaukee is a beautiful, rich, diverse city, but it's also a very fractured one. And you know, sometimes we come up with these great, beautiful ideas, but then we put them in spaces that don't necessarily make sense, or we expect them to fit in spaces that they don't, or there's a ceiling that stops them from expanding outside of the little bubbles that they're birthed in. Yeah, I don't know. Like, how do we make it a cohesive unit? Something that I think about a lot is as a musician, I guess as an artist too, you could say galleries, but I'm thinking about venues is mm-hmm. like, how do venues dictate the neighborhoods or the type of music? How do we expand past that, especially considering that so many of our venues here are bars? Mm-hmm. Like, what does that cut off? That cuts off anybody under 21 who often have such rich perspectives mm-hmm. that we really need. Mm-hmm. It cuts off a lot of ability to network with, you know, we see the younger generations are paving these new lanes and these new aesthetics and these new conversations already, but there's a rift because all of us are already in like a, oh, we've been playing, you know, this or that forever. Or, mm-hmm. yeah. Like how do we bridge that with more spaces that are accessible to everyone, be that through age or transportation? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know if I have the answers. I just know that looking at ways to merge these communities in these conversations is like one that seems really yeah. important to me.
You know, inspired by that, to sort of reframe what you're talking about just slightly, we in our podcasts, we love to bestow the very real but only few minute lasting power of declaring you the czar of arts and culture for Milwaukee. So kind of in the lens, yeah. Ooh. So in the we think so.
I think you're the first person who reacted to that with a cackle like that. You're like, ha, 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 finally.
Yeah,
so given that
proposed like unlimited power, how would might you use that to kind of adjust some of the things you've been talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I would do exactly that. I would look at spaces that, you know, could act as like, I think a thing that we don't really have a ton of here is a good, like medium-sized venue. Mm. Like how can we make one of those that is all ages or that doesn't have the central pull of it drinking and alcohol and whatnot. I think like Kelsey Kaufman over mm-hmm. at Cactus Club does a fantastic job of pursuing that with mm-hmm. her establishment. I think like thinking about the Free Space when that popped up and the Jazz Gallery. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just putting the focus and maybe an incentive on building more spaces like that. And mm-hmm. also getting proper like soundproofing in mm-hmm. these venues. There's great spaces that'll hold a good amount of people that I think that you could climb to the next level of filling as a musician, but the sound treatment is just mm-hmm. like, yeah. And it sounds like tin in here.
Yeah, yeah,
you can't
yeah.
bring your band in here. You can't yeah. bring like yeah. your group in here.
Yeah. Yeah. Right yeah. on.
So just focusing on that initiative of creating more spaces like that.
Awesome. Love it.
Well, even though your term only lasts a few more minutes, we here at Imagine are committed to carrying on the legacy of that policy, which really speaks to, again, how do we make more accessible spaces, quality spaces, which feature mm-hmm. the craft and the art at its best, so that those that are emerging, you know, have more exciting places to play. Those audiences that are emerging could find them, and it becomes symbiotic, right? People get to grow together. And, mm-hmm. and that it's discernible. We're also curious about one more thing. We're really curious about, I know this is something for us on the Imagine team. One of our themes is joyful abundance, and that we really believe that we are more full than we are empty. Sometimes it's hard to see it. Sometimes it's hard to see it or feel it, but mm-hmm. that's something we try to hold on to, this notion of joy and where's the joy. And so we'd love for you to close out our interview before we get the plugs, but what's bringing you joy right now? It could be related to your practice, or it could be beyond that. It doesn't have to be in that realm, but what's something maybe recently or something when you say like, what, hey, what's bringing you joy?
This is funny. For my answer, I mean, my middle name is Joy, but so I kind of got into this one.
Cackle, no. cackle.
No, but what is really bringing me joy, funny enough, is names. Is thinking about names that I'd like to identify components of myself as, naming songs, naming albums, naming objects, kind of that like base level of what is the core of something and identifying it with that. I've got a solo project that I am working on now that I don't have a full projection of when it's going to be out because my main focus has been on my band. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be called Host, and all the different track titles will be different names that I've given facets of myself, mm-hmm. and then an exploration of what each of those are. And so I've been really putting a lot of weight into what's in a name.
Mm.
I think even further on that, I'm kind of excited about this. My band Yuin is releasing a new song this month.
All right.
Like the very end of it. But we're teaming up with this just wonderful woman, Alex Corona, to take all of the funds towards her project, the Name Change Project, which actually helps trans individuals not only fund, but navigate the legal process of changing their name. So I've been doubly thinking about the layers of like, okay, what are the names to me and what are they to other people? And what does it like? It's such a wild, beautiful world. Like when you find something that just makes you glow inside. And so, you know, I don't know, thinking about what that means inside myself and what that means to give to others. And I don't know. That was a very long-winded answer.
No, that's what we want. I love it. I love seeing it animated by it. I'm curious. Could you reveal one of the names and a story behind the name? Like, unless it's giving it away, and that's cool. I've just maybe named some. Yeah, I'm always curious about to your point that I love that the naming process and just unpacking. Can you share a quick story about how maybe something came to a name or how you got inspired to name something?
Yeah. Like of myself or like.
Sure. Whatever's accessible to you right now.
Yeah.
I don't want you to like reveal stuff that isn't ready to be revealed, but I'm curious about that process.
Okay. So like this album that I'm making is going to have six tracks. One of them is going to be Charlie, which is like been my first and foremost alter ego for like the longest time. Huh. I mean, there's the others that I've kind of discovered over time, but Charlie has been like the big one. And that's why the album is called Host, because like, I love my name. Amanda Huff is a great name. Thank you, Mom. Beautiful name, but I've never felt connected to it. And Charlie was the first time that I felt like any action that I did that I connected with was an action by Charlie. And so that one will probably be kind of like a rebirth.
And you gave yourself the name Charlie, or did someone give that name? Yeah.
No, I gave myself the
name. Okay, I don't know if someone just dropped it on you and you're like, oh, that works.
No.
Oh,
yeah. No, it'll be like, you know, if I'm feeling some sort of way, I'll say the name in my brain. And if it doesn't make me kind of explode in the chest, I'll keep cycling through till I find something. And it's like that gut instinct will be what lands and defines. And then you watch the continuity and it's like, okay, well, are you Charlie? Are you Simon? Are you Ramona? Are you, you know, all these different things.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I mean, it's a lot more complicated and deep than that. But
yeah,
Charlie is a really nice, warm one for me. So.
Yeah, I love it. Well, you're also bringing to mind for Amanda, which will probably be another podcast episode, is just this notion of how nicknames emerge, or even like slang or inside bits. Like, and imagine we got tons of bits that we, because they were born of an experience, and they keep getting called back, right? And in a way, we're calling back the bit by its name. Right. Because those have experience getting, oh, yeah, I know that. I know exactly what you're talking about. Or I know that analogy. You're bringing that up. And so I think there's something exquisite about to what you're speaking to is the naming of things, which is the acknowledgement, the celebration, the designation, that almost capturing something that's elusive and bringing it to life. And so that others could see it and maybe see it in themselves. So,
yeah.
So we're just plugged your new album that's going to be coming out in a few. We'll bring it back. To talk about that.
Yeah.
How else can our audience find you when they're with bated breath awaiting that, or find your other projects you're working on?
Oh man. Okay. Well, so I'm kind of bad at the internet, but I've been doing it. If you want to, my personal artist page on Facebook has not been active since I've been focusing on other things. It probably will in the coming months again as I ramp that back up. But right now, if you really want to know what I've been up to, I would say following the You Win with 3 exclamation points afterwards. Facebook, Spotify, iTunes, Bandcamp, like that's where I've been following on Instagram. I guess you can follow my I'm on Instagram as just like Hasselhoff with 3 F's because some jerk took the one with 2 F's. I don't know. I mean, you can find my stuff on iTunes, Spotify, all the goods, just as Amanda Huff. I'll try not to splinter into too many other forms until I get those down. I just built a website for You Win, so I guess that's cool if you type in official youwinband.com.
Okay.
Still working on the formatting.
Maybe,
but
maybe some at some point a return to live performance. People can see you live again. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, I'll be playing at the State Fair Park this Sunday. So I guess this isn't going to be released in time for that to be relevant.
But you'll be playing there, though. You'll be playing at State Fair Park. Awesome.
And then July 9th, I'll be playing at Cactus Club.
All right.
Yeah, with Valerie Lightheart for her EP release. It's going to be so exciting because we also have Black Challenger, if you're familiar. That's Will Bush's solo project. Will is one of the brothers from Immortal Girlfriend. Then we're going to have Dora Diamond, who I actually went to Myad with, and she is amazing. She does burlesque, but she also writes her own music and is going to be performing that. And then there's going to be a drag and burlesque show as the after party. So it should just be like a whole big, I cannot wait to be on an actual stage and not like singing through a screen.
It's been a joy to see all of your joy, moving through the screen, and someday soon we will meet in person and experience that together.
I hope so.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
So Lindsay and I are both like sitting here like, wow.
We're still stunned.
Like, wow.
We're stunned.
You know, the thing about it is that it's an audio pod and it doesn't serve you at all at home to know this, but we just have to name it. Like, it was another dimension to be able to witness Amanda visually as Amanda was sharing, because it really was joyful and all the things, right? Like, it was so cool. So, and I think it's still, this doesn't take away from the audio pod, but I think that's why I'm still taking in all that. So
yeah,
it was great.
I really feel like a really beautiful example of, you might think you know an artist on more of a surface level from like hearing their music and whatnot, but I feel like we just learned so much more about Amanda and the richness and complexity of her art making and her place in this Milwaukee arts community that I am just holding with gratitude.
Yeah. And I'm so excited that Amanda is part of our, you know, Milwaukee. I do think of Amanda as a Milwaukee artist in that sense. And what I mean by that is just, I think there's an optimism there. There's an acknowledgement of the history, but at the same time, a desire to figure out what could be better. And so I think that's just sort of fierce independence, as well as not wanting to be in a box. These are things that just was so present in the interview, also present, I think, in their practice. So so it was so great to witness that. And I think it's so great to have a platform for folks to witness that, and excited for Amanda to do their work this summer. So,
you know who else I'm excited to witness, Matt?
Who are you? Who? Lindsay.
Our listeners.
Hey, hi you. Thanks for listening. Right on. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social, or leave a rating and review, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine This podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKA podcast network.
Make sure you also listen to and subscribe to Black Imagination and back episodes of Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at imagine_MKE or on Facebook or LinkedIn, imagine_MKE.
Thanks again. We'll catch you next Tuesday when we'll have Omar Sheikh on to talk about the reemergence of Milwaukee's food scene as we come out of the pandemic. Till then. Great. We might not use all this, but I will say that I remember there was a time, I think you were at No Studios for something. Like you were on our floor. And I remember mm-hmm. a teammate of mine was just like, that's Amanda Huff. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like looking, I'm like, oh, Amanda looks like they're waiting for a meeting. It's like, yeah, cool. Like, all right. So that was the vibe. That was already, I was like, okay, let me.
Wow, that's so silly. People are always asking me like, how does it feel to go places and know you're this or that? And I'm just like, what? I can't find
right. You're like, I don't have the time. You're like, look, I don't have the time to process all that. I just can't because I need to do Amanda things. Like I just, right. It's like, you know.